I'm just getting my bearings because I plugged the headphone jack into the studio and Ennis uses the studio. And he jacks the headphone volume so high. I plugged in my headset and I think it almost ended my career. I was this close. This was a near-death experience. This was like when I was a kid and I used to read Reader's Digest near-death experiences. That's an old school throwback for the olds, just so you know.
You're still ringing? Were you okay?
Dude. I honestly want Ben punished for this. Like, I'm going to get revenge for this. That was insane. That was the only thing I can equate it to is sticking a fork in a electrical socket, which for some reason some kids do. Like, my brother did that multiple times.
I tested it out. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't get it.
I wanted to know what the fuss was all about.
There was no part of me ever in my childhood that was like, what if I try and electrocute myself?
So you still don't know?
No, I mean, I've had electric shock, obviously. And I think I've grabbed an electric fence, like a minor electric fence before. Mm-hmm. So I guess I did have some curiosity because I remember being like, oh, let me see what this is all about.
For sure.
But I never stuck a fork in a socket.
Are you the older brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm the younger brother, so maybe it's a younger brother thing.
You just needed attention so badly. Please, someone look at me. Please, oh, please.
Someone
please.
Care.
Yeah, somebody look.
Please.
Everyone's like, no. No, thank you. We're good here.
Was Ben messing with you, or that's how high
No, that's
he
how
has
high he does
his,
it every...
No, you dude, come in yeah, here, yeah. and it is blaring
no,
in his headphones.
No,
I have no
sick.
Idea how he listens to he claims, stuff that loud.
He claims it's because he played drums when he was a kid.
I think play drums.
No, I think it's that he's so dumb that he needs it the loudest just to sink it in through that big, thick head. He's got a huge head. Have you seen, like, really looked at his
big
head?
Lid.
Dude, it's massive.
I played drums since I was 12, and I have this on the lowest
you're a real
possible,
drummer.
The lowest possible
no,
level
No, you're a real
volume.
Drummer. That's what I mean. You're a real drummer. He did it for, like, a minute when he was in grade 10, and he's like, I was a drummer. Yeah. I was Neil Peart.
Basically. Look, it's a sweet thing to say. I get it.
No, it is a sweet thing to say. What's a better thing to say? You skate or you drum?
I might go skate personally.
Yeah, for our age.
Yeah,
for our age, top dog.
Yeah, because right? I was a bit of a fake skater. Like, I skated a bit. I was terrible. I broke my ankle away, and then I just like had a skateboard, but couldn't do anything.
I think I have put in the most hours to skateboarding to least return ratio of anyone on planet Earth. Like, I adored it. I loved it.
Yeah.
I lived for it, and I could just never get. Good.
Yeah, I know.
And all my friends were good.
Oh, yeah.
And I would try hours and hours and hours and hours, and I just never could be, like, passable, you know? That,
sure.
That was, like, it's basically like me working out, is I work out all the time, and all it gives me is a mid-physique. It's like, here you go. You look like an average guy.
You're kind of strong now.
Yeah.
Kind of.
No, not really. Like, two high school kids would whoop you bad. Maybe you could take one... skinny one, but two dead.
No chance.
Totally dead. They would. You can't. If you bumped into one high school kid on a train, I'd have to be like, "Sorry, sirs." All this working out just to bend the knee.
Well, this is my stop.
Yeah, just to bend the knee immediately.
Enough skill to like just hit the skate park.
Yeah, when I was a kid, not. But that was the thing. Is like when I got older. I'll never forget during the pandemic, I thought, you know, I'm going to run this back. I'm going to try this. And I was like, yeah. My brother's like, you sucked when you were young. And I was like, right. Right.
Good point.
Yeah, good point. Because one of his friends built, like, a little quarter pipe.
Yeah.
And he has, like, a barn or something. Something cool set up like that. Again, cool skate stuff. And
sure.
Then I immediately was like, me too. And they were like, no. You know, Tom Stewart, our friend, still skates in his 30s.
Nice.
Such a cool thing.
Yeah.
Skating in your 30s. Great.
Sometimes you see a dad who's like out there doing some cool stuff, and you're like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got a kid and you're doing kickflips.
That is cool. Damn it. Would be cool to be cool. Anyways, you know who's cool? Arden Zwelling, friend of the show. You know who else? Two people cool. One person very cool, Shohei Ohtani. Cool customer. Just immediately did nothing wrong. Totally bamboozled. Totally taken advantage of. Absolutely nothing to see here. Let's keep it moving. And then the man, Arden Zwelling, at the Letters, Sportsnet reporter. Jay season upon us. What's up, brother? How we doing?
Hey, dude, the Ennis thing?
Yeah.
Like, I can confirm that.
Yeah. No, it's wrong.
When I've been I've done games at the Rogers Center, like on radio, and he's come in to do his show before me. And so he sat in my seat and like been using my mic and my headphones. Yeah. And I put on the headphones after him.
No,
it's disturbing.
No, it is, man. It's actually
troubling.
That's the thing is there's something wrong. Clearly, like there's something that's not okay with what he's doing, because you can, like Simon said, you can hear people will think, oh, are the studio speakers on? When they'll come in here, and I'll go, no, that's the headphones. That sound you hear is coming from Ennis's headphones. He is blaring it through literally his thick skull.
It's like Guantanamo Bay torture level.
Yes, dude.
Like, it is horrific.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for helping me here, because I'm sure some people listening to this were like, what are you talking about? Who cares? Oh, your little ears hurt? I was like, no. I'm telling you, I put these things in. I just plugged the headphone jack in blind. And yeah, it just about ended me. I'm still not feeling good. I still feel a little nauseous from how loud it was and how jarring it was. Threw off my entire day. I don't think it's ever
going to have hearing aids, man.
Dude, 100%. Yeah, I can't wait. I actually can't wait. I cannot wait. And he's going to be, what? I'm going to say little insults to him underneath my breath and then be like, yeah, no, nothing. You got it. You got it, Ben. I hope he gets big old dirty clunky ones, you know? They have to... they're really noticeable. Doesn't get sleek ones because he's cheap. He will 100% get the big clunkers that everyone looks at and is like, whoa, look at those things.
The thing is, as technology improves, they're going to start to be able to like implant them in your ears or something.
He'll never pay for that.
There's going to be like a laser eye surgery of ears.
Yep.
And they're going to bring his hearing back. So all of that, like all those years of just abusing his eardrums, he'll get away from with scot-free.
No. He can't keep getting away with this. He's got to pay. He's got to pay. And the price has to be his ears, his hearing, his precious, precious hearing. I want it taken from him. I want him to barely be able to hear. I want him to have shattered eardrums and infections and multiple surgeries. Like, I wish that upon him for what he put me through today. Okay, we got to start with the Shohei stuff, dude, because... I actually think that yesterday was the most intriguing way for him to go about this, right? Because had he actually just said, yeah, you know what, I like to wager on some games and I thought it was legal, we did it in legal states, I would have gone, yeah, this is who cares, you know? Because I don't care. Let me just put it out here very, very clearly. I do not care if Shohei Ohtani legally bet on other sports. You know why? I do it every single day and I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't see anything wrong morally. Obviously, if he had bet on baseball games... and especially ones that he had been a part of by like Pete Rose, then it would be a massive, massive, massive controversy. But if it's the other stuff, which it seems like they don't have any proof that there was any involvement in baseball, then I kind of think who cares? That's why I'm almost thinking he's innocent, because to me, I don't really understand why he wouldn't just say he kind of covered losses. But the back and forth and the questions that need to be answered, which is one, if this really was, you were scot-free from this, how did he gain access to your accounts? And if he did gain access to your accounts, like people are like, oh, it's a millionaire and he's, of course he could lose millions of dollars and not notice. I'm like, yeah, except for the banks look out for you in this regard. Like you can't just wire transfer $1 million and your bank is like, who cares? He's rich. That's not how it works. They have mechanisms in place to protect you. And also, you would assume that Shohei Ohtani has a financial team that would also be looking after his accounts because, you know, he's got to pay the bills and do the like everything that he's involved in. He's not doing that. So they all missed it. What's the weirdest part of this to you? Like, where did you land after yesterday in the Shohei stuff?
Well, I believe him after yesterday.
Oh, it's hard.
Well, he just exposed himself to such severe liability.
Yeah.
If he's lying, right? Oh. Like there's a federal investigation going on. So for him to come out and accuse Ipe of what he accused him of, I mean, he is exposing himself to all kinds of liability by doing that if he's lying, if he's doing so falsely. So he must be very convicted and very confident in the fact that he is telling the truth. Otherwise, I assume he's dealing with attorneys on this. He must be. Mm-hmm. There's no way an attorney would allow him to go out and do that unless it wasn't unless it was the 100% absolute concrete truth.
Okay. Can I prevent one counter argument to that?
Of course.
This guy is, how long has he been the most famous baseball player on earth? And like, or let's put it actually this way.
A decade?
Okay. So it's been a decade. How long has it been since you think he lived like a normal life?
Ooh, yeah, longer.
Yeah, okay. So sometimes people in those positions can feel untouchable, wouldn't you say?
Sure. And, I don't think that's the case.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying one way or the other, but this does kind of reek a little bit to me, or at least it could reek a little bit to me, like a guy who is so concerned with his image and does not want to have it tarnished whatsoever that he actually would take a position like that because he goes, no, I'm not having my name disgraced whatsoever. I am above the law. I've already got this guy bought into taking the fall here. Like, we've got him. His family, wherever they are, they're set for life somehow. You know, the silence has been bought. And he's going to take the fall. No further questions at this time. He broke into my account. We just got to figure that part out. It's the second part of it. I think they could figure out a way for them to say how he gained access to the accounts. I just don't know how they're going to be able to say he didn't trip any mechanisms. That's the part to me that once they answer it, I can start believing, but I just don't know how anyone's meant to believe that that could happen.
You kind of made the point earlier, like with the size of the wire transfers that we're dealing with here, just with like the scale of this, there's going to be a paper trail. It's going to be pretty easy, I think, for authorities to get to the bottom of what exactly happened here via their investigations. So I think it would be an enormous risk to go out and lie if he was yesterday. Like, I can't see him doing that. Like, it would make more sense just to say nothing. Right. It's not like he came out and just like denied what had been said. He came out and accused Ipe of things, which have not been proven in a court of law, which have not been proven by an investigation yet. So to me, like taking that step, I mean, that spoke volumes to me. Like the other thing I would present, you kind of said like, yeah, when's the last time he had a normal life, etc. That's true. Like, professional athletes can often be naive to a lot of like everyday normal things. That's why, like, and not just athletes, even just like celebrities, that's why a lot of them get scammed. Like, there's, you know, Google it. Like, there's a ton of really famous people who have been scammed by people really close to them who they trusted. And sometimes it is because they aren't quite as, they don't quite have their backs up as much, or they aren't quite as, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, they aren't quite as just like, you know, they aren't looking out for these things the way that you and I might be.
Okay, so here's the other part of it too. And I'll wrap this up and we'll get into Jay stuff, but I do find it fascinating. Okay, so here's the timeline of when the ESPN started to report the story, right? And I was reading this from ESPN.com. So they got documents that showed Ohtani's name on a $1 million wire transfer that was sent to that allegedly illegal bookie, right? That was under federal investigation. Then they asked Ohtani's people about it. And then it was Mizuhara, is how you say his name?
Ipe Mizuhara.
Mizuhara, okay. That's when Ohtani's people got back to ESPN and were like, hey, he willingly paid off the gambling debts. And it was like a big story. And then there was the Mizuhara saying that he had the gambling problem. Like, that's the timeline of events here. I would have more faith that this was open and shut. Shohei was not taking the risk that we're talking about, if I didn't feel as though everything from his side has been fumbled from the outset of this. Like, I just have such a hard time understanding why there was the back and forth, how Ipe was able to be basically like the voice for Shohei Ohtani without any consultation with anybody else, or how things he would be saying, other people in his orbit wouldn't be all over it going, wait, that's not true. I don't know. It doesn't seem like Shohei has the best agent in sports. Let's just put it that way. I don't think that. What? Yeah, he got him a
great, got him a lot of money.
Yeah, he got him a lot of money. Here's what I would say. Do you think this story happens if Scott Boras is his agent? I don't think so. Not like this. I don't think it's going down like that. It's been pretty disorganized, discombobulated, and yeah, frankly, poorly done. And so that's the part. That's the reason why I'm still. As much as you're right, the risk element is, okay, he's got to be innocent, or he's got to feel as though he's going to be untouchable in this situation. There's so many questions that still remain unanswered that don't feel like they're easy cut and dry answers that I'm not ready to let go of this. That's where I'm at.
Well, I think a lot of those questions are tied back to like the initial response to this as it was all coming out, right? Like that you're referring to. And yeah, absolutely. Like it was super clumsy the way that it was handled at first. I would speculate whether Shohei and Ipe were receiving the level of counsel that they are now at that time. Mm-hmm. They may have just tried to handle this on their own, or maybe with some folks who didn't really know what they're doing. I don't know. I'm speculating. But what I am reasonably certain of now is that Shohei has some very intelligent outside counsel at this time. Yeah. Like he must be dealing with attorneys. And so I just can't imagine that anybody would advise him to do what he did yesterday. You know, if they weren't absolutely certain that it was truthful, like he could easily, he could so easily just not make statements about this. Just say, hey, I'm going to let investigations play out.
Yeah.
You let this process go and we'll talk about it afterwards. But I can't really talk right now. For him to go up on a podium yesterday and accuse somebody of what he accused them of, like to me, that is a significant step and opens him up to an amount of liability that would just, there's no reason to take that on unless you're being truthful.
Again, though, we've seen this with celebrities before. This has happened where they lie publicly because they think they're going to get away with something and then the rest ends up happening. So I'm just saying that this would not be the first time someone decided to go and take a bold action to try to clear their name and image in hopes that it was going to work out, only for to have it backfire. All I'm saying is that.
If he was lying yesterday, the consequences will be severe. And the story will escalate in a very serious way.
As someone who, you know, will never get over him not playing in the city of Toronto, I'm not rooting for it to be that way. But
the schadenfreude, right?
I'm not rooting for it to be that way. But yeah, it's like I won't be heartbroken about it if he turned out to be a liar and a fraud. And
but he's still going to hit like 40 bombs this year.
Sure,
the guy, on the day that he learned he had to have Tommy John surgery, he like went out and had a homer in like a 3-hit night. Mm-hmm. Like he is such an exceptional athlete.
Yeah,
like I would not be surprised if this does not impact his performance in the slightest.
Mm-hmm. Or it's the first time that he's had something distract him from baseball. A guy who, again, in the old Arden piece was just basically going from his hotel to the ballpark and didn't want to be disturbed by anything, any thought other than baseball. All he wanted to do was focus on mechanics and nutrition. And all of a sudden he's got this on his plate and he's never dealt with this before. And who knows, you know, like maybe he struggles. It's a mental game, Arden. It's a mental game.
Not the bet that I would want to make. Yeah. The Shohei Ohtani's going to struggle.
Yeah, but you're his close personal friend. His personal friend. You're like basically after Ipe, it's you. You know, you're the guy who spent the second most time with him up close and personal, going back to his basically, his Japanese baseball days.
Might need to distance myself in that case.
Correct. Right. Okay, so let me start with this. It seems like things really went well with Gausman touching, 95, 96. Is he going to make his, obviously not his first start because he would have been their opening day guy, but is he going to get skipped? How does this play out with Gausman? Where is he at with the health?
Yeah, he looked tremendous. Like mm-hmm. he looked like mid-season Kevin Gausman, which is not what I was expecting mm-hmm. in his first game action of spring and having had the protracted run-up that he's had. I mean, he was just vaporizing dudes. Mm-hmm. Like it was, you know, every pitch for a strike, the splitter was amazing. Like it was funny talking to him afterwards, and he actually wasn't that happy with his splitter. And I was like, what's a good splitter to you if that wasn't a good one? I mean, he didn't feel like it was really carrying the zone the way he needed it to, but it was upper 80s and getting swing and miss, and it was there for a strike. And he also executed actually some really good fastballs into lefties. Like that's a huge pitch for him, just to keep lefties from hanging out over the plate. So I would expect that he's going to be in the first turn of the Blue Jays rotation. Mm-hmm. My belief is they want him in Game 4 against the Rays. Mm-hmm. They want to keep him away from the Astros. So I think that if he reports to the complex today and he feels well and checks all the boxes, I think they're going to try to get him lined up for Sunday against the Rays. But they could also have, you know, if they want to give him the extra day, they could throw Bowden Francis on Sunday and have Gausman open up the Astros series.
Okay, and so my read on they got three guys that are entering, or sorry, well, I guess four because Danny Jansen, but three pitchers that are going to be entering the season on the IL. Romano and Swanson. I think that was a bit of a surprising reveal for some of us because it seemed as though maybe they were going to end up being okay-ish, But is your general read on this that neither guy is going to miss a significant amount of time? Like, how concerned are you with the two relievers? Like, I'm not including Manoah in this. We'll save that for next.
Well, they're going to miss some time because, and it's weird that the Blue Jays have been as sly as they've been about this. Like, they still haven't even officially, like, acknowledged that these guys are going to be on the IL to start the season. But the season starts in 2 days. Like, they're going to be on the IL to start the season. I don't know why the Blue Jays are doing this the way that they are, but these are two guys who haven't been off a mound in around 2 weeks now. And the word yesterday was they might not be off a mound until next week. So they're going to have to restart their buildups. And that starts with like a mound session. And then you've got to face hitters in a controlled environment, whether that's like a live BP or a sim game. And then you typically need like at least one outing in the minors on a rehab assignment, maybe even two. So yeah, we're talking a matter of weeks. Like, these are not guys who are going to be back in the first 2 weeks of the regular season, in my opinion. Like, this is going to be at the earliest, like in that first homestand the Jays have after the long road trip when they've got Seattle, Colorado, New York, maybe somewhere in there, but this could very well extend into mid-April.
Yeah, that's crazy because the way that this read all along was nothing to see here, don't worry about it, super precautionary, but ultimately fine. So yeah, why would they be this way when, yeah, trying to push, like we're trying to report these injuries?
It's tough in spring training because there isn't technically an active roster, so you don't technically have to put anybody on injured list. Like, you don't actually have to announce any injuries. So that's why, like, every day, whether it's me or it's Hazel or it's Shy or whoever, like, we are asking John Schneider, hey, this guy didn't play yesterday. What's going on with that? Hey, we haven't seen that guy for a couple of days. What's going on with this? Because if you don't actually press them on this stuff, they don't have to reveal anything in spring. During the regular season, they have to reveal some things because they have a legit active roster. But during the spring, they don't have one. So look at the Joey Votto situation. He steps on a bat and the word from the club is, yeah, it'll just be a day. You know, he just needs a day to get back. Well, here we are a week later and he hasn't started baseball activity. So in spring, you can definitely be a bit more covert with the injury stuff. But once the season starts, that's no longer the case.
So we have our sister station here that we're beside in the studio I use, which is now rebranded to 680 News Radio Toronto. That's the new branding of that. I think I tried to do that as pro as possible. I was listening to them do it this morning. I was like, that's pretty good. It's pretty professional.
You nailed it.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. But I was asked, the opinioners gathering around, they're like, what's up with Manoah? And I went, can I be honest with you? I don't really know. It's been pretty quiet around Manoah. A lot of Bowden Francis buzz, that's been, you know, pushed out nonstop. Bowden Francis looking good. Bowden Francis, story of spring. Bowden Francis, actually better than you think. Don't sleep on Bowden Francis. We get it. We get it. We get it. But what is the latest with Alek Manoah? Because when we went into this thing and I had you into preview spring, we agreed that he was clearly the biggest story going into spring training. And I don't know, things seemingly couldn't have gone worse. And now what is the plan here? What is the word around where Alek Manoah is going to be, when he's going to be there, and yeah, how he's supposed to progress?
So I believe it was Friday that he got back off a mound against hitters. And I think that was something like around 25 pitches. I know he threw a side yesterday. So then that would mean today would probably be a down day and they would likely pitch against hitters again on Wednesday. So, you know, the Blue Jays could do that at the complex. They could do that at the Trop. You know, obviously the whole team's down here because they're starting against the Rays. So they could do that however they want. And so that would probably get them up to around 40, 45. See how he's feeling after that. If he's feeling good, he'll go through the process again, throw a side 2 days later and get back on a mound and try to stretch out to 60, 65 or 70. And he's just going to keep trying to get built up to that like 80, 85 pitch mark. Probably do that twice. And then if he's feeling good, if everything's looking good, he could go out on a minor league rehab assignment. So he's not somebody who's going to be a factor until May, really, just because he's really had to just restart his spring training buildup.
May. So it's, yes. By the way, you know, let's call it April. Let's call it April, shall we? Let's say it's April because it's what, March 26th today? 26? Yeah, nice. Look at me go knowing the date. That's pretty impressive stuff. It's March 26th today. So, yeah, we're looking at over a month. Over a month until there's real significant Alek Manoah stuff. Here's the second question I have when it comes to this. And this is probably one that should be answered later. But do you think there's, like, what has to happen for Manoah now to be the fifth starter? Does it have to be, like obviously an injury could happen and then he ends up getting called up. He'd be the first guy up. But let's say everybody's healthy and Bowden Francis is pitching well, but also Manoah is pitching well. What happens then? Do you think? I know you're a reporter and you like to deal in facts, but let's play a little, you know, theory time. Come on, give me your theory.
The hypotheticals, we don't love the hypotheticals.
No, but this one's kind of like not the craziest hypothetical. You know, I'm not asking you to go off on a nutso limb here.
Well, I mean, to get into May and have only used five starters.
Nope, that's the caveat. I already went over that. They're healthy here in this scenario. Everybody's healthy.
That's unusual, though. That's unlikely.
Sure,
honestly,
okay.
The Blue Jays to only use five starters by May.
But in this situation, it is. It was an unusual occurrence, and it happened, and they're here, and this is now, and that is what is going down.
Then they are going to have to make a difficult decision at that time based on the circumstances, based on health, based on performance. And I don't have enough information to know how they would make that decision.
It's fine. That's fine. You do whatever, you little sneaky coward. I'm afraid to say it. I just don't want to say it. All right, fine. Next thing then. Let's deal with facts. What's the biggest story that we didn't talk about from spring? What was the most overlooked thing?
You know, I think that the plate approaches up and down the lineup, and it is kind of like granular, but like these are guys who are not chasing during spring, and we can throw spring stats out the window, right? Mm-hmm. But and if you just order MLB spring stats by player right now, the Blue Jays have like three or four players in the top 10 across baseball. Like they raked all spring. I don't put too much stock into that, but I do put a lot of stock into the fact that the Blue Jays had super low chase rates across the team. Like you saw just really strong approaches up and down this lineup from, you know, guys who you expect to see that from, you know, whether that's like Justin Turner or Kevin Biggio, two guys who work really good discerning plate appearances, but then also guys like Dalton Varsho, guys like George Springer, you know, guys who were chasing a bit more often last year. Like you saw those guys take some very real steps in terms of just picking balls from strikes, not chasing pitchers' pitches. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, like a lot of guys who really zoned up, really had an approach, had a plan, had a pitch on a particular area of the plate that they wanted to attack, and did the work to get to that pitch. Like that is what Don Mattingly has been preaching. So John Schneider has been preaching all spring, and look, you preach all spring and then you see what happens in June and July. That's where the real test is whether you're doing it, you know, 2 months from now when you're beat up and you're tired and you're in a slump and things aren't going your way and it's a day game after a night game and it's like 35 degrees outside. Are you going to do it then? That's the real test. But the signs in spring of this team having a really discerning approach, a better approach than they had last year, those were really positive.
Yeah, I was listening to Barker yesterday and he was saying that basically the mantra from the team is that there isn't one set approach, but it's a do damage on what you can do damage on. Like that's the mantra. That's what they want to have. My question to you is on the follow-up of this is how much do you believe that's hey, we got a new pitching machine story, or hey, a guy got laser eye surgery versus that actually working when it comes to those days?
We'll see. Like I am a big believer in swing decisions. Uh-huh. I'm a big believer in like having long competitive plate appearances. I think that has a lot of knock-on impacts. Like even if you end up making an out, which you're likely to do like 65-70% of the time at the big league level, if you make that out after six or seven pitches, if you just lean on that pitcher a bit longer, kind of like a boxer, you know, if you just kind of like wear them down a little bit, if you show your teammates they're a bit more of their stuff, if you make their pitches a little bit less effective, if you can get into the bullpen a little bit earlier, like I think there are knock-on impacts of just having a more professional approach. And I think at times last year, you saw the Blue Jays just make too many outs on like the second or third pitch of a plate appearance when it was a pitcher's pitch. You know, it's like 1-1 to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and he gets a changeup or a two-seamer in on his hands from a right-hander and hits a ground ball on it because that's not the pitch he can barrel. That's not the pitch he can drive and do damage on. If anything, he needs to take that, even if it's a strike, right? Like even if Angel Hernandez like jobs you behind the plate, take it, go 1-2 and try to get to something better that you can drive, like battle with two strikes, certainly. But, you know, this is something that I think there are just knock-on impacts of having that approach. And I think that ultimately that shows up in your batting average, OBP and slugging percentage as a team But it takes time to see those results. Like, you mm-hmm. really have to be consistent with that approach day in and day out over weeks and months. It can't just be a, oh, we're going to do this for the first 2 weeks of April thing, and then we're all going to start freelancing after that.
No, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I think that, yeah, the 100%, definitely true. But when you were talking about, like, the process stuff, I was thinking last year, I don't know if people would quibble too much with Springer's approach. As much as, hey, maybe this guy has lost a step, I don't know if people would quibble too much with even Kirk's approach. How much of that, like, really is just centered around Vlad? That this is more of a Vladdy thing that's being spread to the rest of the team rather than an actual team philosophy that they needed for other guys?
I think you could apply it to Springer as well. Like, he got away from his pull power a lot last year.
Oh, yeah. I was looking at those numbers. It was, like, a huge drop-off.
Right. So if he's attacking pitches that he should be attacking and pulling the ball better, he's just, even if he has lost a step, which is fair to expect as he gets to, you know, around 35 years old, yeah, he's still going to have pull power. Like, he still hits the ball really hard, and he's still going to be able to clear the fences to the pull side. So if he's able to hit the ball in that direction a bit better and attack pitches that allow him to create that kind of contact in that direction better, then his numbers should improve. I mean, Dalton Varsho, like, another guy, right, who just needs to be, and he's talked about this, just a little more calm at the plate, you know, and not as sped up and not as jumpy, and really needs to, like, stay within his mechanics, flatten out that bat path, not hit as many, you know, pop-ups and weak fly balls, and really get to those pitches that he can turn on and hook over the right field wall. Like, look at all those homers he hit in Arizona the year before. It wasn't like a ton of oppo power. Like, there's a ton of pull power. So if he's able to get into that a bit better, I think that his home run numbers can increase. So Vlad's certainly a part of it, but I think there's other players who will benefit as well.
In honor of Shohei Ohtani, I've set the line for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. home runs at 36.5. Are you taking the over or the under? I'm asking this to everyone.
Probably the under.
Probably the under. Okay. So,
yeah, because, yeah, like, 35 is a lot of home runs, yeah. Right? Like, well, when's the last time he hit over 36.5? It's probably since the MVP.
Yeah, the MVP. Year, right? He had 32 and 28, 20, maybe less than 28. I forget.
Like, he was pretty good in 2022.
Yeah.
And he did not hit 37, right?
Yeah, he hit 32.
Back. Yeah. So, yeah. I think that, yeah, I'll take the under on that, but that's more so just, like, I think the line's probably set a bit high.
Oh, wow. You're insulting the odds maker? That's rude. I was saying there's a lot of hype around Vladdy. And basically, to me, okay, you know, now we'll do Jay's story of the season, because I was doing this with, you know, Ben, and Ennis picked Vladdy. And I went, yeah, that's right to me. But to me, it's like Vladdy is the head of the snake of the bigger story, which is, yeah, it's positive regression. How much of this is just going to be these guys getting normal? To, can these guys actually be a good offense? Like, what are they really now? Now that they've doubled down on this group, what are they going to be? Was this just a weird clutch stat team that couldn't find one? If the approach tweak happens and Vladdy is just good, what can the offense be? If they get a better year from Kirk, a better year from Varsho, like normal years from those guys, what does the offense look like? Is that the story for you? Because, yeah, I feel like if you're a Blue Jays fan, you're being a Blue Jays optimist. Kind of the number one thing you need to believe that this team is going to be special is special Vladdy, a guy that would be hitting 36 home runs.
I agree with you, but I would narrow it to even just the top three guys in the batting order, just Springer, Bichette, and Vlad. Like, if you get a bounce back for Alejandro Kirk, like, that's great. You'll take that. That's wonderful. If Dalton Varsho plays closer to his obvious potential, great. Amazing. You'll take that. But the real, like, drivers of this offense and of this team are going to be the top three, Springer, Bichette, and Guerrero. Those are the three who made the most plate appearances last year. So those are the three who had the biggest impact on the team's offense last year, which obviously was underwhelming. And because, look, two of those three, like, had down years and had unimpressive years relative to what they're clearly capable of. So Bo Bichette was great, and I think that he'll take another step this year. I think he could win a batting title this year. I think he could be an MVP finalist this year. Honestly, I think Bo's going to have a tremendous season, but it takes more than just one great player to have a great offense. Like, you need two or three great players. So if George Springer can be, obviously he's not going to be peak George Springer from the Astros days, but if he can be better than he was last year, that's huge. And then if Vlad can get back to 2022 Vlad, like, look, 2021 Vlad, like, might be an outlier. That might be the peak, the best season he ever has. But if he can get back to 2022 version of himself, that's a really, really, really good player. And so I think as those three go, the Toronto Blue Jays offense will go.
I'm buying fully the Bo thing. I'm buying more of the Vladdy thing of being closer to the 2022 version. The George Springer having a 732 OPS in his age, you know, 33 season, him entering his age 34 season, making that much money. That playing kind of the fit for him too, seemingly having to be out in the field more than we maybe anticipated he would have to down the stretch of his career. That's the one that I'm having a hard time seeing.
Yeah, and typically in the back half of these like long free agent deals for outfielders, you don't see the best years of those deals, right? Mm-hmm. George Springer is getting into the back half of that year. He's going to be 35. Like you can, you know, there are a lot of cautionary tales out there of mid-30s outfielders who were super productive in their mid to late 20s, even early 30s, and then dropped off rather considerably as they got to their mid-30s. So look, what I can say of George Springer is that like he is putting in the work to have a better season. He was in like Dunedin as much as anybody. Like it was Jordan Romano and George Springer, the two guys who I was told were like at the complex the most over the winter. And you know, Springer lives in Tampa, so it's easy for him, but I mean he's driving in every day to do the work with the strength staff, with the hitting folks, making some mechanical tweaks, trying to put his body in a good position to repeat the substantial workload that he carried last year and perhaps be more productive through it and not have that workload impact his production if it did last year. So he's putting in the work to do it. He's motivated, like he's got to go out and show it because look, he's like the highest paid guy on the team, right? Like he's the highest paid player in franchise history. He makes $25 million a year. So the Blue Jays are, you know, paying for more than George Springer showed last year. He can't have another year like last year where he was like a 102 OPS guy. Like you need him to be, obviously it's not going to be 140, 150 like it was in his prime, but you need him to be, you know, up over 120 to be getting the most out of your leadoff hitter.
I'm dubious. I'm hopeful. But yeah, he's the number one guy. Like I'm actually optimistic about Varsho because I think that it was so bad last year that it's got to be better. And you look at the home road splits and I go, yeah, just this weirdness. There had to be some weirdness there. I actually think that Kirk is really important to hit, not just to be the defensive guy for this offense to look good. Like I think that they need one of those two guys to actually emerge and provide more support than just leaning on the idea that Justin Turner is going to be some massive upgrade from what they got from Brandon Belt last year. But yeah, the George Springer thing to me feels like if I was doing my top list of concerns, and maybe this ends up looking stupid, he's sneaky high just because of that money, just because of that role, just because they can't move him off the leadoff spot, right? This isn't someone that they can end up going, huh, you know, we're going to mess with you. Otherwise, he's not running down to first base and getting benched like he was last year. That one has real dynamite potential to me. But speaking of the batting order, this is my last one for you about these guys. Are we sure it's going to be 1, 2, 3, those three guys? Because there has been a little buzz over the last couple of days, and this came from Schneider himself, about the potential of Bo hitting in the cleanup spot.
So I could see Bo hitting third. I could see it going Springer, Vlad, Bo. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Bo will hit cleanup out of the gate because Bo wants to bat in the first inning. Bo wants it to be consistent and he wants to bat in the first inning. So that pretty much limits you to three batting order positions, and you're not going to move George Springer out of the leadoff spot because George Springer believes he's a leadoff hitter. So George Springer is going to lead off. And I think that the Blue Jays look at who they want up with runners on and who they want up in run producing situations. And I think they lean towards Bo Bichette right now. So that's why I think you'll likely see Springer, Vlad, Bo. And I think they think there's some, even though I'm not the biggest lineup protection guy, I think they feel there's some benefit to having Springer ahead of Vlad and then Bo behind him.
Springer, Vlad, Bo. That's tough for my 36 and a half home runs projection. That tells me that they're like under as well. You know, that moved the line.
Hit a home run from anywhere in the batter.
Sure, but
why does that impact?
Yeah, I'm just telling you that moved the line from 36 and a half. If you bought the under at 36 and a half like Arden Zwilling did, congratulations, because the under has now moved to 34 and a half with Vladdy potentially being moved into the two hole. That's exactly what ended up happening. Shohei Ohtani, obviously he was on it early. Hey, brother. Oh, wait. Last thing, the actual last thing. Is there anything I missed?
Sure.
Is there anything like, you know, because you're the hipster guy and I always have to get your kind of like hipster storyline thing. And I know you talked about the damage and, you know, the team's approach. But I actually feel like that's becoming a little more mainstream. That's a little bit more of a mainstream answer from you. But is there anything right now that you're looking at and you're like, you know what? This particular thing or this particular player, this is the hipster narrative or this is the hipster player that you're looking forward to. Like, you're going to buy into Ernie Clement, right? Like, you, like, where, what's, who's your guy?
Ooh, who is my guy on this team? Who's the hipster guy? I mean, Ernie Clement could be like a Stephen Kwan type, which is like,
that's pretty good if he's that. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. For an Ernie Clement. I mean, the guy makes, you can't get a pitch by him, right? Like he's makes such insane amounts of contact. And the Blue Jays have done some things with the swing path in order to just get that contact off the ground a bit and get a bit more line drive. And he's been doing damage this spring. He's had a much better approach this spring too. Like he's really bought into that approach stuff we were talking about of like getting your pitch in your part of the zone. Like the gift and the curse of his contact ability is that like he can literally make contact with anything. And that includes pitches well off the plate. And he often has made pitches, contact on those pitches. And that's just not how you get extra base hits at the big league level. So I think if he like blends that better approach with some of the swing path stuff that he has improved on, I think that he could be, yeah, he could be Stephen Kwan. And like the other thing is he's fast as hell. Like he's probably the quickest guy on the team. So like that plays in. I mean, he's probably the quickest guy on the team. Yeah. Honestly.
Like, no, I know. I'm just saying that like it's not exactly, this is a team with Vogelbach and Vladdy and George Springer, and you know, they almost brought Joey Votto up. Like, although that seems done.
So his sprint speed's league wide though.
Oh, okay. Okay. There we go. That's better. Give me the league wide
over. He's up over 29 feet per second regularly. So like 30 is elite. So he is like borderline elite speed. So it's, he hasn't, look, speed is an attribute and base stealing is a skill. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't really shown the skill to this point of base stealing, but he has the attribute of speed, which can show up in other ways, you know, first, third, second home, on weak contact, you're reaching base more often because you're putting pressure on defenses. Like that does show up in results. I don't know if he's going to be a big base stealer. That just doesn't seem to be his skill, but I think the attribute plays. To me, like the biggest thing this season, honestly, and it's not even any singular player, it's that the Blue Jays need better stories coming out of their development system. Like they need to be doing a better job of developing. Like last year, Davis Schneider was the one good story that they had come out of their system, and he played 35 games, maybe, right? Like the Blue Jays just need to be doing a better job of identifying talent in the draft, amateur-wise, also internationally, and then they have to be doing a better job of developing it once they get it in. Like, you can go back to the 2022 draft, and when you see, like, the Yankees were picking right after the Blue Jays, getting a Spencer Jones and, like, a Drew Thorpe, like, right after the Blue Jays took players who have not risen to those, like, to the highs that those guys have in terms of prospect lists, which obviously is dubious, but that's not a good look. When Davis Schneider's the one good, like the one player providing upward pressure on your big league roster, like that's not good enough. You need an Aurelvis Martinez providing that pressure. You need an Alan Roden, a Damiano Palmigiani. Like you need some of these guys to start pushing up towards the big leagues so that as players like George Springer age out and Kevin Gausman, some of the, you know, Kevin Kiermaier, some of the other veterans on this team, as some of the younger players who are ticketed for free agency and are likely to or possible to depart this franchise via free agency leave, you need that upward pressure. You need legitimate 2 to 3 win big leaguers coming from within to help replace that talent. Otherwise, you are looking at some very lean years ahead.
So I talked to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America about this. Do you know him?
New Hampshire guy, right?
Yes. So
I don't know him personally, but I know his work.
But covers the team very closely. Big prospect guy. One of my favorite guys that I've spoken with and about prospects. It's like, he's been on it, on and on it. He and Kylie McDaniel are like my two favorites to kind of pick the brain of because they actually know what they're talking about. His assessment was that the Jays have a real philosophical problem of taking guys that don't have high enough ceilings and are supposed to be floor players, and yet they've missed also hitting what they thought were the floors. And so to me, it's like, okay, they need to be able to hit on some of those dudes. They need some of those stories to emerge. They need some of, you know, what you're talking about, that upward pressure. I don't think that that's coming this year. Like, I feel like they either have to change that philosophy and it's going to be something that has a trickle-down effect a couple of years from now, like the Arjun Niemela kid, who seemingly does have more of the boomer bust potential. Like, that was one of those picks. But I just don't see how this is going to happen around this core over the next season. Like, that's not a story to me this year in terms of what we're going to see on the roster. That feels more of a story of what you could see down below, hopefully. Do you agree with that assessment?
Spencer Jones was like a third or fourth year college guy out of Vanderbilt. Yeah. Like that's, you know, that's a huge miss. Like Drew Thorpe as well, a college guy who you know, went right after the Blue Jays picked. Like that, again, that's a big miss in 2022. So I think they could have some better stories this year, like particularly like Aurelvis Martinez, if he goes to AAA and demonstrates some of the strides he made in terms of swing decisions last year and like keeps the strikeout rate down and the walk rate up. Like that's your guy, Aurelvis, who could have like the Babe Schneider arc this year, where he comes up in the middle of summer to fill in for somebody who's hurt and puts up just a gang of extra base hits and homers in a very short amount of time. Like his power is as real as anybody's in the minors. He has the most homers in the minors for the last 3 years, and he's only 22. Like the other guys who are on that list are all like 25, 26. So like if he can show up and if he can be real, that's huge. Obviously, Ricky Tiedemann, who's going to be on this team at some point, if he stays healthy, if he keeps making progress. Like you said, Arjun Namala is like further off, but he's one of those more risky type of picks, one of those more upside plays. We'll see what he becomes, but you're not going to see him until like 2026.
He's what, 19? Is he 18? Yeah, he's young.
He's a literal teenager. He'll be younger than a lot of guys who are drafted this year. So I think that like Martinez, Tiedemann, and Alan Rodin are like the three who you would really like to show up as positive stories this year.
Arden's Welling at the letters, reporter for Sportsnet, all around just everything. Columnist, Mr. Baseball here. Thanks for doing this, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. Be well.
See you, bud. Let's take a quick break. Let's talk about hip drop tackles.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's a little cringe when a guy like me tries to take a position, a hardline position on player safety issues in sports. It is. Like, who am I to say to these men in the NFL that play a dangerous sport that they're making a poor decision for their health and safety? But come on. The National Football League has banned hip drop tackles, and they've said there's three qualifiers, right? They've got three things that they have to look for now, and it's spin, okay? So you spin the guy during the drop, and that's no good. You can't do that. But they outlined yesterday, I think I liked it instead of doing a DM to myself. But yeah, I think there was over 256 tackles that would have resulted in 15-yard penalties last year. And so I think that defensive players having this information would now change the way that they're doing some of this. So you're not going to see 256 illegal tackles. Sorry, it was 230. 230 hip drop tackles last season that would have resulted in penalties. By the way, 15 of those tackles resulted in injury. So it's like, it's a bit of a dangerous play.
For sure.
My only thing is like, again, at some point here, the league has to just decide and accept certain risk to the players. Like it's a physical sport and people love the physical element of the sport. And to me, I empathize with the defensive players who at this point, it's like, what are you supposed to do? Because you're not allowed to hit the quarterback up high. You're not allowed to hit the quarterback down low. You got to hit him in the midsection, but now you can't hit him in the midsection and then drop your hip. It's just the ways that a defensive player can now ground an offensive guy feels next near impossible. What are you supposed to do at this point? And to me anyways, this is very much like what I've said about the other sports. And football almost feels it's too big to fail with fantasy football, football culture. Just the one day a week where we all sit down and say, this is what we're doing on a Sunday, right? It's the perfect sport right now. It's got zero failing in terms of growth and viewership and anything. But does anybody want to see it where the defenses don't matter? Where, you know, a sport that has been often built around the idea of defenses matter translates into just who has the most elite quarterback and who can run up the most points, and it feels like you're just playing a game of Madden with your buddy where neither of you can ever really get a stop, and maybe if you get a turnover, that ends up being the one big swing moment of the game. I hate this. And I can't remember a time where the NFL made a rule at least recently, that just everyone universally that watches the sport, comments on the sport, the amount of defensive players in the sport that seem so against it. That well, just
And the, even the NFLPA was like against the rule change.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So like, who is this for then? If the NFLPA, like if the Players Association is saying, we don't want this, what is the point? And I hate it because it just, it does feel like this league is trying to prepare for an eventuality of just being flag football. That they're like, we're 15 years away, we're 20 years away, that somewhere in a shady room, these guys are going, someday, we're going to put the flags on them. And that's what we're going to have. Ugh, it's just terrifying. I just don't know who this is for. Just tell me who this is for. Who is this for? Is it for the 15 guys who got hurt? Because their association didn't stand up for them. Is it, who is it for? Like, is it for the fans? Because the fans don't want that. The fans just want to see that. You go look, if you go look at those highlights of what are deemed penalties, you're going to get sick to your stomach. You're not going to believe it. There's like, I would say, out of all of the hip drop tackles that I actually watched, there was one that I went, ooh, that's kind of dirty because it was to the sideline. It was actually my quarterback, Geno Smith. It was a Giants game where the guy behind him, he's kind of dragging his legs underneath him, and then he pulls the hip drop late on the sideline. But it's like, no, that's more the sideline, and so he thinks he's vulnerable there. It just sucks, man. It just sucks. Leave football alone. Like, stop doing this. They're actually, you know, we talk about hockey needing more of a competition committee, baseball needing more of a competition committee. These sports need to get creative to figure out ways to make the sport better. Football, I actually think, is the opposite, where every time they go to the competition committee and they try something new, you just go, hey, guys, you actually have a great product. It's perfect. Don't screw with it. All you need to do is not screw with it. And yet every year it feels like they get bored and they're like, we have to just screw with it just a tiny little bit. But again, who is it for? That's all I want answered. Anyways, quick break, and then our friend Jackie Redmond. I knew you when. Jackie Redmond, former Miss Plays of the Month host here at Sportsnet. It's weird for me to see you just standing next to The Rock, asking questions to The Rock, one of the most famous people on the planet, and that he like definitively knows who you are. This isn't just like The Rock was passing through and he was like, did a car wash and did a million different things, and you're just kind of standing there with The Rock, and I'm like, and you don't look at a place. I'm like, oh yeah, look at my friend Jackie Redmond doing their thing with the Rock, one of the most famous people on the planet. Jackie Redmond of Jackie Redmond Show on YouTube. Subscribe, review, go check it out, and then of course of WWE. What's up? We haven't done this in a while.
We haven't. I know. I love coming on the show. But yeah, last night was
you're famous.
Career highlight on Monday Night Raw for sure. Attitude Era is back, baby. Yeah. It's back.
You're getting a little too famous because you were already a bad texter. You were already a bad texter, like iconically bad texter. My favorite is when you initiate a text with me and you send me something and then I reply. And then there's nothing ever again. It's just like you're like, hey, what do you think of this? And then I'll reply, and then it's just darkness back. It's just nothing. It's just, okay, right, Jackie's really famous now. There's no more time for the peons. But you still make time sometimes to come on the show, which I appreciate. So things are good?
Things are great. And I will say, like, as bad of a texter as I am, I think I've done a really good job in my life of making sure that the people close to me in my life are aware that I am just epically bad at it, that I am not a good texter. I read texts, I tell myself I'll respond later, and then I forget. And I've never really course corrected.
No.
I've never really realized that.
No, but it's hit a new level. It's hit a new level. It's hit, you got to admit, like, you've always been terrible, but it's like reaching a new height.
Dude, you should see my email. Yeah,
I don't want to see. As someone who has, there's two types of people, right? The ones that can allow notifications all over the place, and then the ones that just cannot. And I am in the cannot camp. And okay, so, and this is a bad one for me is, so I try to interact with people like on Instagram, right? If someone follows me and spends time and, you know, wants to try to send a message, then sometimes I'll try to read. There's always abusers of this policy. But usually I'll try to give like a little bit of interaction with somebody. I have the worst thing is when I'll open it up and I'll see the multiple notifications. Like, that's why I just can't open up my Instagram, because I'll need to clear it. So I'll need to read those things immediately or just delete them, because I can't even see it for a second. So I cannot have it. I'm clearing my emails, my texts, everything immediately. And you are just like, let it build, let it ride. Who cares? The phone is just overwhelmed. It's done. It's past.
So, like,
have you seen Ariel Helwani's?
No.
Oh, it's abhorrent. No, he's good. Sorry. He's good. He was on with someone who had it horribly. Ariel's like me. He's a good guy. He's a good person. He keeps it clean. I'm sorry, Ariel. I'm actually really sorry that I almost mislabeled you for this, but he was on with someone else that was showing him, and I went, this is not appropriate behavior. You're like that.
I love that your assessment of if someone's a good person is if they clear their text emails.
A clean person, yeah, a clean, tidy, respectful person. Yes, like, you're messy. I don't want to go, like, something in your place stinks if you have that type of email situation build up. Like, I just can't believe that you're fully tidy. Somewhere, some corner, it's gross. There's a gross laundry pile, something. There's a skeleton somewhere.
I've got the junk closet, like Monica on Friends.
Yes, that's Friends. Exactly right. Yes. You're a little late to clear the kitty litter or something. Something, yeah. It's 100% something. But yeah, so yeah, just tell me this right now. How many emails do you have right now in your email inbox that are unread?
Give me one second.
On your phone. On your phone.
Well, I have three emails on my phone,
that's
JD.
What I'm saying.
Got my WWE, my NHL, and my personal.
No, the main one. The main everybody reaches. Because my work email I actually don't check either, but that's because I don't put it on my phone. But if it was on my phone, then I would actually be a model employee who would check it all the time.
Okay, I don't want to put this out there,
no,
but I'm going.
It.
My personal email that I have had for, I don't know, 15 years, okay?
Yeah. I'm already
ready. 98,315.
Oh, I'm really sick. That is.
But it's all, like, it's a lot of spam. I just don't clear out the spam. I just scroll through it.
Oh, 98,000. I hope that there's just, I hope that there's in there just meaningful stuff, you know? Like, I hope your mom wrote you an email one time and was like, Jackie, this is going to take a lot. I just want to write down my thoughts of how much I love you. And then you just didn't even see it because it's 98,000 emails. Like, the amount.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Yeah, that is terrible.
I contemplated lying.
No, tell the truth. You got to tell the truth. But yes, there's good people and there's bad people, and I am in the good. You are clearly in the horrifically bad. 98,000 is messy. Like, no, Armin, are you? You're immediate clear.
I have to clear, yes.
Yeah, you're clear. And Simon, you're immediate clear.
No, I'm at 42,000 emails.
On your phone?
Yeah, 42,706. I thought I was bad, but 98,000 is next
level. I would have never accepted
42,706.
This is important. I can't believe that there are people out there like that. It gives me the heebie-jeebies. Like, honestly, I think that there might be even something actually wrong with me. I might be like the Howie Mandel of emails and phone notifications where, like,
fist bumps only.
Yeah, I just can't have it. Okay, so let's dive right into it. What's the Toronto take or the Leafs take that you've been sitting on for the last couple of weeks since I last spoke to you?
Well, I don't know if it's a Toronto specific take.
Okay,
it involves
you're doing some sports. Okay, let's go. I like these.
Well, it involves the Leafs, but it's more so just listen. We're a couple of weeks away from the season being over. Every year this happens to me. I start to get. Especially when the Leafs are playing well and things are happening that make me believe, which is happening to me right now. I'm really starting to believe in the Toronto Maple Leafs a little bit and think that they are different in the right ways than they've been in years past. You know, I'm sure you've covered it at length on your show. But I am a person that believes in matchups and injuries. Those are everything at playoff time. And it really bothers me when people, if you go, okay, would you rather have the Bruins or the Panthers, which is an obvious question right now, because we don't know who's going to finish first in the division and who's going to finish second. So for me, people will say, oh, who cares? Like, if you're going to win something, you have to beat everybody. And I think that opinion sucks. I hate that opinion. Because if you can avoid the Panthers in the first round, I'm putting my hand up and saying, yes, give me the Boston Bruins. I'm not chanting it. I'm not chanting things outside of the arena when the
Don't be rude to those children.
Yeah, I'm not going to take it that far, but I do think that, like, I guess my question for you, is it too early to talk about a preferred playoff matchup?
No. It's never too early.
Right?
It's never too early. I would say a couple things. One is it still hurts my soul that this is just going to be the way it is, where the youths in Maple Leaf Square will basically represent the entire city's fandom. And I love the youths.
I know.
I love the youths in Maple Leaf Square. Like, I could never do it ever. It would never happen for me. I don't like people bumping into me in general. I got to be at a concert because then there's music and I'm bumping around and jumping around. But like that viewing experience is horrible to me. But then, yes, the rain, sleet, or snow. I love those kids that do that stuff. I think that's phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. I would not be able to, my old man knees and back are done. I could never just stand out there and endure the elements like those kids. So we need them. We need them. And cameras all over them. But, yeah, like it's tough that they will now, whatever happens, they're going to represent us. The one thing I would say is if I was those kids and the Leafs win a playoff series this year, and they get Florida again, right? They beat Boston, they get Florida again. They got to do the chant. You got to double down. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. Do it every single year. Never stop doing it. Picking a playoff matchup, here's my real opinion on it. I think both options are so unbelievably bad that I can't believe that they're back in this position. Like you said you don't want to face the Panthers. You'd rather face the Bruins. You're conclusive on it. To me, I'm actually... Yeah. I think the reason why I've avoided it is I'm borderline depressed by the question. It's like, do you want me to stab you or slice you? And I'm like, ugh, I don't want either.
Well, I just think that Florida has clearly been probably on the whole the best team in the East from start to finish. And I think that, like, the Boston Bruins are a little bit more flawed than the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something about the grittiness of the Panthers that I think would be tougher for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't think the Bruins are as quote unquote tough as they used to be. And so for some of those reasons, I like the Leafs against the Bruins, but I also would love for the Florida Panthers to have to face the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, because I think it would be a highly entertaining series. But I also think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be a tough out, despite the fact that they're now like this wild card team that's had to really claw their way, you know, to hanging on to a playoff spot. But I do think they are going to be a tough out, especially if Vasilevsky finds, you know, like 5% of playoff Vasilevsky in April when the postseason starts. So if Florida has to face Tampa, I think that's going to take a lot out of them for a potential second round series if they eliminate the Bolts. So I'm kind of thinking like that way, like a couple of steps into it.
See, I don't let myself go there anymore. I just don't.
That's
been beaten out of me. You know, but you know what hasn't been beaten out of me? And it's like, so I think that you're like, again, just like the emails, you're one of two kind of fans. You're the kind of fan who's looking towards what is actually the reality in front of you, right? Which you're doing, the practical element, which is who would you rather face? Because this is what's happening. I'm still in the mode every single year of bitching and crying about this being the way it is, you know? Like, I won't accept that it is this way. And so all I'm doing, even Armin after the show, he's like, you know, you're going to talk about the playoff format this week with some of the guys. And I was like, I talk about the playoff format nonstop. I'm watching these teams in the Pacific Division who I think are all completely fraudulent. Like, I don't think, you know, what? The best team among them is definitely going to end up being the Golden Knights. And I think that they're in fourth as of right now. I think the Avs are good. And I don't think the Stars are anything. I actually think people gassed them up and went crazy about the Stars and was like, ooh, the Stars, the Stars, the Stars. It's like, they're a bum squad. I see them lose all the time. I've tuned into their games.
Oh,
like,
too far.
I'm like, you're nothing. You're nothing.
No,
you're
squad.
Nothing. You're nothing. They're nothing. If they, this is the thing. If the best, I would say, the best six teams in the NHL, five of them are in the Eastern Conference. Panthers, Bruins, Leafs, Rangers, Hurricanes. And then Avs.
So you think?
Yeah.
You think in a seven? Okay, so you think the Dallas Stars are a quote unquote bum squad.
Bum squad. They're in the Eastern. They're in the Eastern Conference. They're in that scrappy mix.
Do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs would destroy the Dallas Stars in a series?
Destroy the Dallas Stars.
That much worse than Toronto.
Destroy them. They would destroy them. They would pick their bones with their teeth, or they would pick their teeth with their bones. That's the way that goes. They wouldn't pick.
I actually would love to see that series. I think it would be a very competitive series.
By the way, I'm pretty sure the Stars are just like ripping wins in a row again, but they also were playing crappy teams. I'm basing this off of me having bet on them a couple of times fairly recently, and Ondra giving up a billion goals. I mean, watching going like, this is the guy with the 900 save? I don't know. They're supposed to be the goaltending team.
It does make me a bit nervous, but, you know, there's a lot of things about the Leafs that make me nervous, too. I'm not saying the Dallas Stars are like my cup favorite.
Yeah, you kind of are. You love the Dallas Stars. You're obsessed with the Dallas Stars. You won't get over it. I can't wait till they get bounced in the first round. I'm like, oh, my God, Jackie's Dallas Stars that you picked to win the Stanley Cup. They're out. They're done. They're finished.
You're being a Twitter troll right now.
No, I am. I'm definitely trolling to a certain degree, but I will say that there is part of me that's just kind of annoyed and fed up with the idea that the Leafs are in this division that has, during their peak time, is kind of stacked against them. It just feels like a Blue Jays fan, where you're American League East, where you look out, you're like, they would have been better than the Tigers all these years. Like, they would have been better than the White Sox all these years, the Kansas City Royals all these years. And I think that the Metro has two awesome teams at the top. And then the rest of it is like the Flyers, I'm pretty sure, are third in that division still. And every time the Leafs play the Flyers, I'm like, oh, God, this is a extreme mismatch. These two teams are not close. Yeah, I think that there's, in the East right now, six good teams, four of which are in the Atlantic. That's annoying to me. And I think out in the Western Conference, there's a lot of flawed teams, but we're not watching them because it's too late. And then whenever they come play the Eastern
Conference. Here's the thing, though, JD. You have to accept reality, because as much as you want to,
I hate it.
Rant and rave. I just have one point to make. As much as you want to rant and rave about how tough the division is and
it's not fair.
It makes it tougher for the Leafs. They had the all Canadian series or division year, okay?
Yeah.
And they blew it.
Don't talk about that, Jack.
It's immediately meaningless because in a year where there was no goaltending, no defense, they had a 3-1 series lead over the Habs and they couldn't do it. So forget about it. You can't argue that anymore.
You know what? You really haven't lived here long enough, because there's an omerta, okay? Vow of silence about that year in Toronto. No one discusses it, all right? No one talks about it. Everybody shut up about it. No one acknowledged that it exists. It's not real, and you're making it real by speaking it into existence, and I don't like that. This is not... We can discuss that. We can discuss that on the Jackie Redmond show, okay? Not on this one. On this one, no one speaks of the Montreal Canadiens coming back from a 3-1 lead after I sent out a billion texts to every Habs fan I know that were the most aggressive, rude, friendship-ending messages that I've sent to any group of people ever, and had it backfire on me in a way that I will never recover from, that I still receive screenshots from on a regular basis. No more acknowledging of this. No more acknowledging whatsoever. Yeah, I think if I had my druthers, I think that you're right, that the Panthers are a better team. I think that they're a tougher matchup on paper from an actual personnel standpoint. But I also do believe in the psychology of sports, and I think that there is something about the Boston Bruins that is just in the Leafs' brain, and it terrifies me too. And that's why it's slicing or stabbing, is I actually don't think it's a debate as to who is the better team, even though those two groups are very, you know, much trading spots in the standings every single week. I think it's pretty clear at this point, especially given the streak that the Bruins are on against the Leafs and how the Leafs looked in those two last regular season games against the Bruins, that those guys just have a real psychological edge against the Leafs, and that scares me too.
And I think too, what makes the Boston Bruins, you know, now that you bring up the ghosts of Bruins Leafs past, I think too, what makes the Bruins scarier this year is what happened to them in the first round last year. It's like that is fresh in their minds. Mm-hmm. They want to redefine, you know, their narrative. They want to bounce back from that, because that was, I mean, they're, best regular season team in history, and then they lost in the first round. So, like, that's embarrassing. So I think the guys that on that team that were involved in that are coming into this postseason, you know, trying to, like, right a wrong in a lot of ways. And so what does that do to the Boston Bruins? How tough does that make them mentally going into a first-round series, too? So that's a little bit scary as well. But I think we should also talk about, because I did say off the top of this conversation that I'm believing in the Leafs because they are different. They feel different in the right ways this year, and part of that is the depth, and it took a really long time to kind of to show itself. Mm-hmm. But I think the last time that we talked, we had come off, we'll be coming off the winning streak for the Leafs, and we were talking about how we loved that during the streak, we saw some different guys stepping up and making an impact. And we saw that this weekend, obviously. And I think, I don't know how much you guys are talking about Bertuzzi in Toronto.
A lot.
Because I unfortunately don't get to hear the show every day. But I think it's amazing that I think in the last, like, 15 games or something, he's got the same amount of goals as William Nylander. Like, that is a really, really comforting thing to see happen and see unfold for the Toronto Maple Leafs a couple of weeks away from the playoffs. Yes. My question for you is, do you think these depth players, quote-unquote depth players, Bertuzzi, Domi, McMahon, like, do you think that these guys have the characteristics of players that we see in the postseason where the hockey is different, it's tighter, it's more physical, it's all of those things? Do they have the characteristics of those depth players that show up in playoff games, in game sevens, in playoff overtime games? Mm-hmm. Do they match the personality of those types of players, do you think?
So I think, like, I like to say, as they say, take the piss when it comes to Dubas conversations right now, because he's had a horrific year, and it's kind of fun to kick the old guy when he's down and gone. And I'm so like thankful that the Toronto Maple Leaf fan infighting that came with the Kyle Dubas era is over, right? Like, or at least it's kind of ending. There's still some lingering sentiment, but I like it when the fans are on the same team, and when the fans kind of like my one good thing I can say about JFJ, right, is that, and this is the only good thing I can really say about him, is that everyone hated him. And it was fun. We were all fans together, right? Everyone was united in their hatred of a front office, or everyone gets united in their hatred of a coach. And maybe part of it is the social media era that all fan bases fracture and faction off. But it did feel like the Leafs group especially was extremely divided. Like, that's the one good thing about Jays fans right now is, you know, at least everybody's pissed off together. Everybody's frustrated together. So I like that. I like when the fan bases are on the same page when it comes to frustration and wants. And I felt like the Dubas bar, people were such huge fans of him philosophically that they just wanted it to be right so badly that they would move the bar to, like, well, the Leafs outshot a team in the playoffs and the analytics were there, you know, like they outchanced them and you're like, they got goal lead. And I was just so done with that. But it's year one of the differences between the two guys, right? And so I do think that this is a pretty appropriate time to be comparing them. Maybe it's going to be this year and a little bit next, and then everybody should be moving on and, you know, let the ghost of the past be the past, right? People don't reference JFJ all the time here now. It's just, it's gone. It's done. Time will heal or create separation from that. But where I'm going with this in a super long-winded way is, I think Tree Living has done a couple of things unbelievably well in terms of showing his blueprint and how it's different from the last regime. He's banking on more secondary scoring. And there's been awkward moments with that this year, right? There's been times where you go, where the hell is Domi supposed to fit on this team? Because they can't trust him in his own end. And it doesn't look good. And he's playing with guys that don't have a lot of skill. And he's not playing on your top special team unit. And boy, it's kind of ugly. And, oh, Bertuzzi is getting sat by the coach. And maybe this isn't a good fit. And when guys are mercenaries, are they buying in? And does Sheldon Keefe like him? Is he too aloof? Does he take too many bad penalties, right? We've had all these conversations about these offensive players or these guys that are supposed to provide secondary scoring. And now you're starting to see, after an entire regular season of guys getting their bearings and their footing or whatever you want to call it, that if you're going to believe that, as you said, the Leafs are what? You said same but different? What was the way you
different
said it?
And different Sorry, in the yeah. right ways.
Different in the right ways. That's, when you say that, to me it reeks of
they are going to be able to have other guys come up and score a big goal. I never felt like when Pierre Engvall and David Kampf were on the ice together that they were going to score a big goal together, right? Like, there's never been a group that I felt was going to come up in a major spot. And now, I've listed this multiple times over the last couple of weeks, but right now I feel as though outside of the core players that you could get a big goal from Bertuzzi, from Domi, from Yarncroc, from McMahon, right? From Nyes. That's already five guys. That's already way more than you've ever had before. And I'm excited to see how that plays out over the course of a series where it doesn't feel like the weight of the world is just purely on the shoulders of Matthews and Marner and whether or not those guys produce, that they actually have other guys that can show up. And then the other thing is, I do feel like this group sticks up for each other in a better way, that they do play with a higher level of intensity. Sometimes, you know, the McCabes and the Domies, they let that get away from them a little bit. But they stick up for one another more. I just think that they're a tougher team. They're a nastier team. They've got more dudes who are not going to be afraid of the moment. Did you see our boy Darcy Tucker on Spittin' Chiclets the other day, like the clip of him talking about playing?
I've seen clips.
Did you see the clip of him talking about playing in Toronto?
Yes.
How he ended it saying, it's not for everyone, but I loved it.
Yep.
I think they got a bunch of guys.
My favorite.
Yeah, I know. I think they got a bunch of guys who aren't afraid of playing in Toronto and who aren't afraid of the spotlight. And I think that's going to matter too. And that the tree living outside eyes with those two elements particularly, again, hasn't built the perfect team, going to need some time to see the full vision. But in year one, identifying those two things and like stepping in from, out the outside has been huge for me. And so, that's where I'm most optimistic. And that's where I'm like, I'm totally with you on the other guys showing up in those spots.
Yeah, it feels like for the first time in a long time, because I think in years past for playoff matchups, right, the opposition, the other team's coaching staff has been able to be like, listen, shut down their core four, shut down their top guys, and we like our chances if we go toe-to-toe with our depth players. Like, even if the Leafs manage to take our top guys out, like, we like our chances if it's depth versus depth. And this year, in years past, I would be like, oh, gosh, if Matthews and Marner aren't producing, like, oh, I think we're probably cooked unless, you know, Jack Campbell somehow becomes Patrick Waugh, right? But this year, if the Leafs end up in a series against the Bruins or the Panthers, while it's daunting and it's scary, this is probably the best I've felt where it's like, okay, if they take out our top players or limit them, I feel a lot better about our depth players coming through in some of these games and making a difference and at least posing a threat, right? Like, at least making the other teams think, like, I need to know where this player is because they can burn us. Like, this McMahon kid has been so much fun to watch, first of all. But I also think, like, that's a player that other teams have to be aware of. And it's not to take anything away from, like, the bottom six of years past for the Leafs, but they just weren't scary. Like, they weren't intimidating, I guess maybe is the right word. And I don't mean that from, like, a physical, like, tough dropping the glove standpoint. I just mean, I don't think they instilled a level of fear in the opposition in terms of, like, if you let up on us, like, we're going to make you pay and we're going to score a goal.
Totally.
But I think that we have bits of that now.
That's totally right. I feel as though there have been years past where it was, okay, the big guys need to score and the rest of it is punt. Punt, punt, punt.
Yes.
Make 100%. Sure that that's all it is. And now it doesn't feel that way. There's still awkward fits. I think that they really miss another center. They absolutely need to find more balance on their blue line moving forward. Their special teams, their penalty kill specifically is a disaster. Like I said, this has not been perfect. I'm not trying to say like, oh, Tree Living has been the savior. I think he's going to be criticized for the misses this offseason if they get knocked out, whatever. But ultimately, those are just a couple of things that I've really enjoyed about this team so far. The differences with this team and why I'm a little bit, well, I shouldn't say more optimistic because I was really optimistic again last year. And this is the time of year where I start to get a little optimistic. I'm like, well, you know, maybe outside
of honestly,
2020.
I'm also the type of fan, like, depending on the day that you ask me, like, my level of faith in the Toronto Maple Leafs can turn on a dime. Like, they can play terrible tonight, and I'll be like, they are fraudulent. They ain't going nowhere. Like, tomorrow I could be a totally different person.
See, this won't matter to me because the Devils and I think Capitals are coming up. Like, that stuff, I don't care. All I care about is that they don't give Ovi more goals in the Capitals game. But outside of that, my feeling swings when they play.
They have Florida coming up, don't they?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is when they play Florida, if Florida, you know, boxes their ears in and Sam Bennett's doing mean things and, you know, Nick Cousins running, if they're doing that and then the Leafs lose like they did to the Bruins, I'm just going to be basically back in my mode of don't even play the playoffs. Just hit the fast forward button and tell me what the end result is going to be. Okay, before you go. Wait, what are you going to say?
Okay, go ahead.
No, no. Well, what were you
going to
say?
I was going to say, who would you start in game one of a playoff series tomorrow if both goaltenders an option, healthy?
Wool, because I just saw him look unbelievable. And I've said all along, I think it's 60-40 Wool, but that it was going to be a battle. Which it has been. It's been both guys playing well. But no, to me, it's just basically you play the hottest hand, and it's just based off of literally the last two games' results is I thought Wool looked better. I think that he probably ends up getting it, but my answer is just purely whoever had the last best game, whoever outperformed the other guy clearly over these last 12 games, that's who you just go with. I'm honestly, like, I'm a little bit more confident in Wool, even though we haven't seen it as much. But I'm totally fine with Samsonov. I think both guys are playing well, and it's just it's the perfect problem to have finally for this team.
Yeah, I it's nice to have two goaltenders that you have faith in, but I do think that in a playoff series, managing that is going to be a huge deal for Sheldon Keefe if things go awry in the first round for the Leafs and they have to make a switch at some point. Because I still, like last year, the Boston Bruins, I think part of their big problem was making the switch too late. And then it burned them. So it's a great thing to have two guys that you believe in, but you also have to make the right decisions at the right time when you're in game 3, 4, 5, 6 of a series and things are kind of, you're up against a team like the Boston Bruins or the Florida Panthers, where that the time that you make that switch is crucial if you have to make it.
That's why I think that I think they kind of need one of these two guys to establish himself a little bit more. Just because that it doesn't become a situation where they lose one game and then the other guy's in, you know, and then it becomes kind of herky jerky. But either way,
I agree.
Yeah, it's just, you want one guy to be the guy where you feel like, okay, it's two games or three games and then you're pulling that lever. Okay. Do we want to do your travel story, or can I ask you about how much you'd pay for a pet surgery? It's up to you. Which one do you want to do? I'm bringing everyone else.
Okay. I'm going to go travel. I can't be talking about pet surgeries. I don't know where you're going with that.
They're just,
I would always want to save my animal. It's my quick answer to that.
Yeah, because you have a cat, right? Do you have two cats?
Yeah, I do. Clyde.
No, just one, right?
Clyde's an only cat.
Yeah, okay.
Just one.
Yeah, okay.
No. I actually really want another one, but yeah.
I'm going to ask you this question then off air, and maybe I'll end up asking it to the guys in the second half block. Okay, what's your travel gripe?
Okay, my travel complaint of the week is this, and I'm shocked that I have not actually spoken about this on your show before. So I'm a window seat girl, right? I like the window seat.
Good for you. Hey, guess what?
I feel like I can lean up against the window.
Yeah.
It's my jam. I like the window
seat.
I like to be able to see
the things, and you also have good bladder control. Good for you. Congratulations. Because, if you go in the aisle, then you're a pee-pee poo-poo person. you gotta pee and poo bad all the time if that's what you're doing. But yes, okay,
no,
your window.
Here's the thing. I like to think that I have a very strategic way of, because I drink a lot of coffee and a lot of water, right?
Oh, so you're a window and a pee-pee poo-poo. Okay, let's go. That's a bold.
But here's the thing. I have a rule.
Okay.
I have a rule. If my flight is under 2 hours, I'm pretty positive that I'm not going to have to use the restroom, right? But if it's longer than that, I have a rule. I can get up once. I allow myself one time to make the row get up. I think that that's fair.
Okay.
But this is not my complaint has nothing to do with how many times you get up to use the bathroom or stretch your legs, whatever. My complaint is this. As someone who sits in the window seat, if I have to get out, there's this common thing now where people don't get out of their seats.
No,
they
just crazy.
They expect you to crawl over them.
No.
And just recently, just the other day, I was on a plane and I actually, this dude was huge. And I was I am either straddling you or putting my back end in your face. And I'm just not comfortable with it.
No kidding.
So I was like, can you guys just actually step out into the aisle? Do you mind? And they looked at me like I was out of my damn mind.
No.
And I was like, I don't understand why you want me to physically crawl over you. And so many people do it. I do not understand. get up, take one step out into the aisle and let people out. I like, why is this common? It's actually so common. I don't get it.
Yeah. First of all, those guys were like,
is it laziness?
No, no. First of all, those guys were like, yeah, do it, crawl.
There was a woman. It was a woman in the middle, right. And then it was a dude on the end.
Okay,
to
fine.
Be fair.
So
they both did it.
I think that that is on a plane. That is beyond psychotic behavior, because I was at the Raptors game on Friday night, and when I was going back to my section, there were some ladies that, and I don't want to be. Nah, I won't even be. I was going to say this is kind of sexist, but I feel like it's more of a lady move than it is a guy move to turn the legs sideways and just be like, go by. And I'm like, no, just get up for 2 seconds. It's like 2 seconds. All you got to do is stand up. If you are an elderly person, then I tolerate the hip turn, knee together, little swivel move. Fine. Okay. If it looks as though it's a genuine struggle for you to get up as someone that is, I'm going to set the over under at 62 years old. You got to be 62 plus for you to do that. But I think it's just unbelievably rude behavior. And then like, they're looking at you as though it's like, these are seats. Like I have to be, this isn't your house. I didn't show up in front of your couch and be like, move your legs. You're like, how did you get in my home? No, we're at the Raptors game. Move your legs on a plane where it's tight quarters. Yeah. And you have to get out and stand at the proper side of the aisle, which is, you know, the opposite way from where the bathroom is. That's worse to me is when you're on a plane and they get up and they stand on the wrong side. And you're like, what's wrong with your brain? Like, how did you make this calculation to step behind the seat? This is insane. And now I got to do the double move beside you. But no, I think this gets back to the hobby horse of the show, okay? And I talk about it all the time. I feel like common decency is shrinking. The more we're in our screens and the less we're staring people in the eyes and actually dealing with people directly, the more we can just kind of put our head down and focus on just that little screen, and that's our full attention span, the less we're being considerate to others, because we're just like, ah, you're interrupting me from screen time. You're taking away from my serotonin drop that I'm getting, my addiction that I'm getting. And I think people are sucking more. Like, I talk about it all the time. You get on the train, and people are all wearing their backpacks in rush hour. You're like, how is this happening? You go try to open a door for someone, they're not holding it for you for, like, an extra split second. You're getting on a plane, more people rush into the front, less people getting out of their seats. Happened to me again at the Raptors game. It's everywhere that there are public seats. It's crazy. We're losing it. We're losing it as a society. We got to... There has to be those of us that hold firm, and I'm sorry, and shout out to my boy Armin, because he said that he called out some people on the train last week when they were wearing their backpacks. I was like, good for you, buddy, because more people need to say, you know, more people need to just say, you need to stand up, please. Like, that's, you got to have that level of confrontation. You can't crawl. We cannot crawl over the people, okay? We cannot crawl past everyone. We can't just get bumped by the backpacks. We have to say, we have to stick up for ourselves. We can't just lay down and accept that this is the new reality. We got to fight. We got to fight. So keep fighting, Jackie Redmond. Don't just give up. Tell them to stand. Do not crawl over those lazy people. Please.
I am crying right now. This is a rant of epic proportions for you. Please clip that and put it somewhere. Start with the people are sucking more.
That's no, people suck way more. Yeah, and people, listen, people have always sucked, all right? we didn't go from some non-suck planet over here. The sucking has always been extremely high, but it's like it's reaching unsustainable levels. Like we're in the red here, people. We got to figure this out.
So you think that it's appropriate in that situation for me to be like, can you please step out into the aisle? I'm not crawling over you. That's not rude,
right? I actually don't even think it's... Yeah, I think that that's actually the common thing. I think they are rude. The idea that you're asking for something that is common decency and that you have to ask for that is unbelievably rude of those other people. Like, I can't even put myself in that frame of mind. I'm telling you. Like, I would be so embarrassed if I side-turned
my legs.
And, JD,
I'm not joking. This is not like this happened to me one time. It happens...
That's what I'm saying.
Time.
No, you got to say.
The time.
You got to say. You got to set the standard. You got to say, because that's nuts.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore because I've done it. I've crawled. I have crawled. And it is a terrible feeling.
Yeah, no, it's a horrible feeling.
Honestly, it's the worst.
No, and I just got a tweet from a guy, Dana, the goalie guy I'm looking at. He's like, if you do the leg swivel instead of standing up, I'm not responsible if I step on your foot. And Dana, I will tell you, I have done that on purpose. I'm not, you know what? I'm just going to say it. When was this? This was two Raptors games ago. I stepped on a girl's foot. It was a girl too. And I stepped on her foot because I was like, you're going to do the leg swivel. I'm stepping on your foot. And I did it. I totally saw it and I did it on purpose. Yeah, I did it. I did it. I stepped on her foot and she looked at me like with the most disgust and I kept it moving and I never looked back. I have no regrets. I stand by my action and I accept whatever consequences may befall me, but I did it. I will step on your foot. I don't care about gender, you know, anything. I did it. I'll do it again. I'm with you, Dana. I was afraid to admit it, but Dana, he made me do it. So I've done it, but I'm not advocating you do it, but I'm saying I'm not advocating for others to step on others. I'm advocating for please stand up. Please stand up.
We got to end it here. Yeah, you can't follow something.
No, we can't. Hey, Jackie, thanks for the time.
I'm literally crying.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, I'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Jackie Redmond, WWE, Jackie Redmond Show on YouTube, all those things. Am I wrong? No, you guys are with me on this. You guys are 100%. Decent people. Yeah, you guys are decent people. That's the thing. Is like, I wouldn't have none. Like, again, if you swivel your knees and you swivel your legs, and I actually feel like this is an important sport. So they would be like, stick to sports. This is sports because this happens way too much at like sporting events. You got to stand up. Is it annoying standing up? Are there people who stand up way too often in the aisles, right? Are there the worst offenders, which are the people that come in the wrong side of the aisle, where they selfishly make the move of, oh, wait, there's two sides and I'm looking across and instead of just going back and around, I'm going to go across. Yes, they're villains too and they're monsters, but be better. Be the one who stands, okay?
Let me tell you, as like
baseball season's upon us, like we're here.
That's where it's most important.
Yeah, like we're here. We need it. We're all in it together. Yeah, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
Let's just stand up for each other.
That's good. I'm an aisle sitter in an airplane just because it works for my leg room.
Yeah. Pee pee poo poo guy.
It's leg room.
Got
a lot of
pee and poo in you, buddy.
Mainly leg room related, but I'm standing up every time.
Yeah.
Because here's the other thing is I don't want people crawling over me either. You don't want to be the crawler or the crawlee. Dude. Both sides of that are weird and uncomfortable.
That's, you know, when that's acceptable, the leg swivel is if it's your siblings.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, if it's your sibling and they're, like, moving, and you're like, and you barely move, and you're like, screw you, sibling. It's 100%. Like, that's fine.
Family, but different rules apply.
That's what I'm saying. That's the only time. By the way, if you're listening to this and you've leg swiveled, I just hope this is a wake-up call for you. Like, I really do. I hope that this is a real moment of self-reflection for you to say,
why do I do this?
Yeah, why do I do this? Why can't I just stand up? Why is it that I'm perturbed by just the smallest, just standing up for a second?
Yeah.
Again, there's other villains, people who don't sit down in their seat right away. They're standing. Is this the right section? Sorry, I thought this was 131, row 14. No, get back out of the aisle. You know, people who show up late and are doing this. There's but we can be better.
I actually think the cup holders in the lower bowl will help with that at Jays games because, like, people have less stuff to deal with.
Nah.
And it's just kind of easier.
Here's the problem. It's a fine theory, but like I said, at all of these Raptors games, you guys see where I sit. I don't sit in the ups, you know, sit in the downs. And yeah, there's cups there. There's cup holders. And people still do the side shuffle move, the legs together, hips swivel.
To the side. Yeah.
Look at you like, that's enough. And you're like, well, step on your stupid foot. Like, ugh, I hate it. Jackie's right. I'm glad we did that. Anyways, let's do a quick break and then hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Already getting a lot of replies on social, at JD Bunkus on Twitter and Instagram. You ever want to reach out? But a lot of people are fired up about the non-stander uppers.
Like, they're on our side,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Thank God.
But again, I think that if you're someone who doesn't stand up, you're going to not want to put that out publicly.
Right.
Because you have no excuse. Or you're just going to be like, I have a bad hip. And it's like, yeah, no one's talking about you. Like, and actually, here's the thing too. You know how I know that the people who don't stand up don't have bad hips? It's because that's what you would say immediately. I'm so sorry I have a bad hip.
Yeah. And you'd go, and I'd go, oh, okay.
I'm so sorry. It's hard for me to stand. And then you go, oh, yeah, no problem. Okay. I'll get by you. No problem. And then you make a little joke and you have a little cheeky interaction and you keep it moving. Like, anyways, follow at JD Muggins Twitter and Instagram. Reach out anytime. What is this quick clarification via text about the headphones? What is that?
Oh, someone, TJ from Port McNichol was disgusted that you and Ben use the same headphones. So I just wanted to clarify.
No, I don't use the same headphones, yeah, exactly. TJ.
Yeah.
I'm saying I plug my headphones in
to the same kind of like
shut
box,
up,
let's
TJ.
Say.
First of all, like, you're disgusted and you live in where?
Port McNichol.
Lots of gross things go down in Port McNichol. There is absolutely no doubt. Grosser things than sharing a headphone. These aren't earbuds. Like, there's studio headphones and he uses his and I use mine. I have my separate headphones. That's the way most of it goes here. How dare you, TJ, from Port McNichol? That's how we first learn of Port McNichol, is TJ crying about things? Gross. Sad. All right, what did we miss?
Couple more rule changes in the NFL. Oh, yeah. They agreed to change the kickoff rule. Mm-hmm. So do you want me to explain this?
It's
over social.
Yeah, but no, it's important to explain, which is that instead of, they basically want to get rid of the murders, mm-hmm. the high impact collisions, which is kind of sad, but I get it. If they want to, here's what I would say. This isn't a hill I'm going to die on. I want more kick returns, and that's what the ultimate goal is.
Correct.
Here, is they want more kick returns. So what they've done is they're now setting up, like in the XFL, if you ever watched it, which no one really did, at the opposing team's, what is it, 40?
It's like 40, and then there's a five-yard gap.
Yeah, so it's just, yeah, it's eliminating the huge run-ups that guys have. Mm. It's eliminating the massive guy looks up and doesn't call a fair catch and ends up getting absolutely smoked because the dude has run, you know, 40, 50 yards and nailed them in the sternum, or even worse, like Paul Amala used to do when he should have been put in prison at USC, hit people in the heads.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I love Paul Amala, but yeah, you go back and look at Paul Amala kick special teams plays, and you're like, this guy is not in jail for life. It's like he ended people's lives. He ended people's careers. Anyway, what other rule do you want to discuss?
Well, so also, like, quickly, the new kickoff rule will allow cool things. Like, in the XFL, they were doing, little reverses.
Yeah,
and, like, you can do some blocking stuff. The bummer is that surprise onside kicks, and as a fan of a team that had perhaps the most famous surprise onside
kick in
the Super Bowl.
Actually, that's interesting.
Like
the onside kick is gone.
You have to declare,
right?
For the onside kick.
Oh, yeah, you have to declare because you were on the other side of it. Yeah. So they're just keeping onside. This is the one thing I actually wish the NFL would figure out, though, is that they've still never figured out a way to add something that's better than the onside kick, mm-hmm. for the other team to recover the football and add some excitement.
Some leagues were like trying with like, you can go for like a fourth
and
15 or whatever.
But that's the problem, is that everything has felt too gimmicky to me.
Yeah, they've never figured it out.
Yeah, they've never been able to figure it out. It's the white whale.
And it sucks because, like, onside kicks are exciting, but they just never work.
They never work. So, yeah, that's it.
So, the other quick rule change was they just pushed the trade deadline back a week, which I think is probably good. And we'll just add some juice to late season stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Seahawks traded a second round pick to get Leonard freaking Williams.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And maybe had they pushed it back a week, they wouldn't have done that.
They would have blinked at that.
Yeah. They're like, oh, let's give this middling defensive tackle a bunch of second round picks so you get some money
capital.
So that we can suck.
Yeah.
Great trade. Good stuff. By them.
There's mounting belief that J.J. McCarthy is in consideration for the number 2 overall pick with the Commanders. Mm-hmm. Seems a little early for a guy who threw like 12 times a game. What hot draft takes do you have now that we're about a month away?
One is just that the J.J. McCarthy thing is really confounding to me.
It's crazy. All the sports books, like
he's going way high, and a lot of people think that he is going to be unquestionably the fourth guy taken, and not just the fourth guy taken, but that it's going to end up being early, that a team probably trades up to take him, that he's really impressing at his individual team meetings, that teams really just adore the guy, and that he's got the right mentality, that he's leader, all this different stuff. I never saw it at Michigan. Like, I never, if you would have asked me blindly without the input of others whether he was a first round pick or not, I would have been like, no, obviously he isn't. But yeah, I'm surprised by it. I'll definitely do draft takes, but I am going to be really curious to talk to Brady Quinn and maybe some others about why he's jumped up or why he doesn't pass the eye test. Because this is something, like, we're watching this in college basketball right now, right? Like, Cody Williams doesn't look like a fifth overall pick, but he is. And so it takes a more acute eye that watches them over and over and over again. And so that's the way I'm going to be willing to accept this. But it does feel a little bit like desperate for a quarterback. Anyways, we got to run. Subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you tomorrow.